and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. Week two of the college football season in the rearview mirror now. And I have got David Teal from the Virginian Pilot joining me here as we dive into NC State winning 35-31 over Virginia down in Raleigh for a non-conference affair. David, we all made it back safe and sound. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Preston. Hope you're doing the same.
Yeah, you know, just taking it week by week at this point. That's what Virginia's got as well. So again, a close one, kind of a little bit of a heartbreaker for Virginia down there in Raleigh. Let's start off with kind of your one big take watching the Cavaliers down in Raleigh on Saturday.
Opportunity missed.
Simple enough.
Yeah, I mean, we can delve into it a little bit, but it's you're what 10, 11 yards from the winning touchdown. And for all the world, it looks like you are going to win the game. And truth be told, sitting there for 3+ hours, Preston, I thought Virginia was better. I think if they played again tomorrow on a neutral field, I think they'd win. And they had been so good on offense, so efficient through nearly two complete games. No turnovers, so perfect at the end of the first half in 2 minutes against Coastal, so perfect in 2 minutes at the end of the first half against NC State. And here they have another 2 minute opportunity and they go straight down the field. And Chandler Morris did the one thing that he could not do. And I mean, he made a mistake and he owned it afterward and Tony Elliott owned it. You know, stuff happens, but it was, to say the least, suboptimal timing.
Yeah, for mine, I'm going to take a little piece from what Tony Elliott said there at the end of his press conference. I know we were trying to decipher it right after he said it because it was kind of a little catchy there, but better, not bitter, is kind of how they respond to this game. You know, are they going to get better from it or are they going to be bitter by it? And, you know, there's been a lot of talk, you know, on social media, on our message boards about the Cavaliers after this one and Tony Elliott and this coaching staff. It looked like at halftime, you know, going up by 10, it looked like the game where UVA might actually take the step under Tony Elliott to winning, you know, a tough game on the road and kind of be able to build off of it. It looked like a different team there in that first half, even despite the defensive struggles that they were already clearly showing, but they had kind of, you know, started to make some improvements. But that third quarter, it kind of looked like a step back to where they had been. And so I know, and I kind of played a little tongue in cheek with this in my write up after the game, but a lot of fans were calling this the most important game of the Tony Elliott era. I said, you know, by season's end, you know, there's going to be at least another two or three games that fans will refer to as the most important game under Tony Elliott. That's how much is ahead of this Virginia team. I do think it's a very important season. That there's no lies in, you know, getting around that. But I still believe strongly this is a 7-win team. I had them as an 8-4 team before the season because I thought they'd win a game like this. But I think if you look ahead now, you know, obviously, a little bit of a soft landing with William and Mary and Stanford the next 2 weeks. And then you have Florida State and Louisville back to back. Those are probably, you know, from when I was talking to ESPN's Andrew Adelson, the two toughest games left on their schedule outside of whatever voodoo magic goes on with the end of the year in the Commonwealth Clash. I think they do. It makes those games a little bit more important, especially when it comes to fan engagement, because if you are 3-3, if you lose those two games, you get into the middle of October and that's when basketball season starts to come and a lot of fans might start to turn their heads a little bit. I guess just how do you think this game kind of plays out in the grand scope of this season?
I guess it's TBA. And you know, I get the fan mindset, and Terry Holland once told me many, many moons ago, Preston, when he was the AD at Virginia, is you never want to get to the point where every week is a referendum on your head coach. And it feels like that's where the Cavaliers are with their fan base. And that's unfortunate. And it's not a great way to do business. It's not a great way to try to coach your team, because back in the day, there was plausible deniability from the players who could say, "We don't read the newspapers," and maybe they didn't. But now it's always in their face. It's on their phones, and all the speculation and such. So that part of it makes it difficult. But again, as you alluded to, the schedule is beyond manageable. And as Tony Elliott hammered home time after time on Saturday, this wasn't a conference game. So it does not cost them in the standings. But again, I go back to opportunity lost. And you mentioned the third quarter. NC State comes out in its first three possessions of the second half, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. The Wolfpack is back in command. But then, as bad as the defense had been in those three possessions, they gave the offense every opportunity. They came up with two big stops when they absolutely had to, and gave Chandler Morris and his guys a chance. And they couldn't punch it in at the end.
Yeah, let's talk about that now. Getting into our kind of game breakdown now. Three straight possessions there in the fourth quarter, with 0 points. And this is where each drive ended. So you had one drive at the NC State 30-yard line where Will Bettridge missed a 47-yard field goal, which we'll talk about the merits of. That 47 yards is his career long. It bangs off the upright. The next possession, NC State 8-yard line. Jamari Taylor comes up short on a fourth and one run. And then the last drive, of course, 12-yard line. Chandler Morris intercepted in the end zone. Three straight possessions ending on the 30-yard line, the 8-yard line, and the 12-yard line of NC State, and you come up with 0 points. I don't have a lot of negatives to say about the offense on the day as a whole, but those kind of you had a chance three straight times and you came up short.
Yeah, and we can go through each sequence. I understand Tony Elliott's explanation post game about the decision to attempt the field goal. Big picture, it makes sense when you say, okay, if I kick a field goal, now I can win it with a field goal because you're down four.
Yeah.
But and here's where I differed. The way your defense had been playing, you had just given up three consecutive touchdowns. You had no expectation of stopping NC State. I think you needed to be aggressive there. I think you go for it. But okay, we can all differ there. The fourth and one down at the eight, when they come out in that jumbo format, whatever you want to call it, we all knew what was coming. You had seen it the week previous to the opposite side against Coastal. It just seemed too easy to diagnose for State's defense. And the fact that they ran that predictable play, I think you can really second guess them there. And then, as we discussed, Morris did the one thing he couldn't on the throw on the wheel route, especially considering it's first down. If you can, there are so many other outcomes on that play that aren't that bad, given that it's first down, and you still got a timeout in your pocket. You still got more than a minute on the clock. I mean, there's no reason to rush it there. And he forced it, and he paid for it.
I'll start with the Chandler Morris interception because obviously that one got a lot of talk on social media. And I talked about it in the post game show that we did on Saturday. But basically, from talking to Chandler Morris, talking to Tony Elliott, talking to Jamari Taylor, basically how it played out is, this is something the running backs had recognized during the game that, they were getting covered on these wheel routes by defensive ends. And obviously, any running back is going to say, I like my chances in that kind of matchup. And, to his credit, Jamari Taylor said he was open. And if you look back at the tape, he was open, just not in that spot where Chandler Morris threw the ball. Morris said on the play he got flushed out, was trying to throw it, saw that seeing Sloan's back was turned towards
Turn
him,
toward him.
so that's why he put the ball placement there. But good on Sloan for coming back inside. I think in that situation for Morris, the only two options that you really have are throwing the ball away or just throwing it, into the deep corner of the end zone where only Taylor could get that ball. I think that was kind of where he made the mistake. A lot of people brought up Dakota Twitty was open
Open.
underneath, but that is a very tough throw, especially with a defender bearing
Ac
down on you
across your body.
across your body.
Right.
I know people say it, no, it looks like he's like even with him. It's like there's a reason some people play the game and like they like these angles don't work out like they do as seen on TV, I guess.
Yeah, and plus easy again for us to sit up top and see an open receiver. We don't have a guy bearing down on
Yeah.
us as we're running in the opposite direction. So he saw what he saw and he tried to make a play. And hey, look, that young man made a ton of plays
Whew.
on Saturday and is just gutting, crippling, however you want to describe it, a turnover as that was. I walked away more impressed with him than I did after having watched. I wasn't there, but I watched it on DVR, having watched the Coastal game, because it was on the road against a far better opponent, and I think I mentioned to you after the game that offense is going to be a problem for people, for a
Yeah.
lot of people. The question is, can they fix it defensively?
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about there coming up. But yeah, Chandler Morris, just to go over his numbers, 30 for 43, 257 yards, a touchdown, an interception. He's actually 27th nationally in ESPN's QBR rating right now. And actually, CJ Bailey had as easy a day as it looked easy out there, just the way he was doing. And a lot of credit goes to him for the plays that he made. But Virginia gave him a ton of space out there. But Chandler Morris, despite the interception, still really well in that quarterback rating. I want to also touch on the other two drives there. The Jamari Taylor come up short on fourth and one, that run there. I know they ran it against Coastal Carolina and it worked well in that game. I think that play, a toss play in that situation, it's too slow developing to really, to get the push that you need. I definitely agree that Jamari Taylor should get that ball in that situation. That's basically what Tony Elliott said. He didn't care what running back it was out there. They were going to go to them. I just think that play is a little too slow developing. And that's, I want to talk about Des Kitchings on Saturday as well. That's one of only two plays I really had a qualm with after the game. And then Will Bettridge, 47 yards out. I agree with you. Like the way the defense was playing, he had no business expecting they were going to come up with stops after that. As far as I know, a lot of people right after that missed field goal, they're like, well, that's the game. Because the way the NC State was moving the ball that day, it's felt like that was the game. Let's talk about Des Kitchings
Hey,
now.
can I interrupt
Oh,
you just
yeah.
one second? And it's kind of a tangent, but wouldn't it have been nice and for Virginia to have Grady Brosterhouse at that point? And I think Elliott even alluded to it a little bit afterward. They need to get him back, man, because that was
Yeah.
such an he was such an effective weapon on third and fourth and short.
The country's most important third, fourth string quarterback. It really feels like that.
It's
It.
peculiar, but it would have been another option.
Yeah. They found success in the opener against Coastal Carolina. Obviously, different opponent, different, skill level and everything, with some bigger fronts, going seven man offensive line up there. But yeah, Brosterhouse kind of just adds that, almost guaranteed, short yardage compliment in that fourth and one situation. Like that's exactly when you need a guy like that. Looking at Des Kitchings overall, though, I came away from this thinking that this was Des Kitchings' best game he's called at Virginia. Now it could be a low bar, just based off the offensive performances in recent years, but I really only came away from this with two, maybe three calls that I would really question. And the two calls were in the first half, they had a third and five where they decided to run the ball and then settle for a field goal. I thought, they've been killing NC State on these, underneath mesh throws, these mesh options all game. Why not take a chance and try to get that, put the ball in Chandler Morris's hands and try to get a first down there. And the second one was the fourth and one toss play to Jamari Taylor. Those are the two that immediately come to mind. The field goal decision, that's not a Des Kitching decision, obviously.
No.
That's a Tony Elliott call. So those two calls are really only ones. What did you make of Des Kitching's overall in this game?
Well, I think Virginia gained more than 500 yards, right? That's a pretty good day for an offensive coordinator. And spread the ball around, and it was balanced. They could throw it, they could run it, and different wideouts. Morris got loose for what I think it was a 42-yard run. You
Great
referenced.
play call, yeah.
And he pulled it. I mean, it was designed. It's not like it was like, oh, hair on fire, gotta avoid the pass rush. And Jamari Taylor, three rushing touchdowns, including the one of what, 66?
Sixty-six,
Am I
yep.
right there? Don't have the excuse me, I don't have the box in front of me. But it's hard to argue about an afternoon like that.
You brought up the stat on Saturday. It's tied for the most points they've scored against a Power Four opponent with last year at Clemson and at Wake Forest. So I guess they're 1-2 now, and they scored 31 points against a Power Four opponent. I just overall I thought it was a really good performance. You mentioned balanced offense. It doesn't get much more balanced than 257 yards passing, 257 yards rushing, like on the dot. And explosive plays, they had 11, which was a big improvement over last week when they, struggled to get some explosive plays in the run game. Overall, like I saw people like, this is why we can't trust Des Kitchings after the game. And I was like, this is not the game to bring that up. There's a lot of other games that Des Kitchings, there's several complaints that you can have, but this was not the one. I thought this was his best game at Virginia. And even going into how he set some plays up, the first play of the game, they have Cam Ross come in motion on a little, touch pass to him. Later on, they run that same play. Defense goes with Cam Ross. They hand off to Noah Vaughn, who gets a 20-yard run and sets up another touchdown for UVA. So he was playing the chess game out there. And I think maybe towards the end of the game on that wheel route, everything was set up. Like they said, they've seen it all game. I thought maybe, with the time that was left in that game, maybe you could run the ball a little bit more and try to take some time off the clock. You had the time, you had a timeout. Overall, I thought it was a great game offensively. And I really don't have any, thing to any really anything to complain about the offense. I thought there was too much attention put on the offense after a game like this.
No, I if you have to assess blame, and look, that's what folks do after a game. You can go to a lot of different quarters before you head over to Des Kitching's locker. I just that would not be my first, second, third, or fourth option there.
Yeah. Real quick, last thing on the offense. We got to talk a little bit about Jamari Taylor. If we didn't put out a player of the game poll this week, because we usually don't do it after losses, but Jamari Taylor would have been the player of the game. 17 carries, 150 yards, three touchdowns in his return to his home state of North Carolina. I thought it was funny that, he was well aware that he was kind of going back and forth with NC State's Hollywood Smothers because they are both Charlotte kids. Jamari a few years older than Hollywood, but it was a fun matchup to kind of watch those two guys go back and forth. A couple numbers here. Jamari Taylor was the first UVA player with over 100 rushing yards against a Power Four opponent since 2020. That was Brennan Armstrong against Boston College. First running back since Jordan Ellis in 2018 in the Belk Bowl. Now, David, I'm going to put to you here. I looked this up this morning for a separate story. He was also the first, the 150 rushing yards, so the most by UVA player, or most by UVA running back since who? Against a Power Four opponent. Running back here. The last player with over 150 yards against a Power Four opponent was Bryce Perkins against Virginia Tech in
Yes,
2019.
in 2019.
But the running back, that's, you gotta go back.
Well, you're giving me a hint there. I mean, are you going to take me back to like Thomas Jones?
Not quite that far. Not quite that far.
Okay. Then I don't have any guesses.
So there are two players with this similar last names in the 2000s, both spelled differently, not related. I'll give you that hint.
No, I'm going to come up blank.
Cedric Pierman in
Oh,
2007
okay.
against UNC. That was the last time a UVA running back had rushed for over 150 yards.
As opposed to Alvin Pierman.
As a put, yes, that was my subtle hint there, because
Yes.
I had to make sure when I was writing the story I spelled it the right, the Pierman the
Yeah.
right way. But that's just kind of speaks to the start to the season he's had. First UVA player with five rushing touchdowns in his first two games since Kevin Parks back in 2011. It really seems like they have found a lead back in this backfield.
Oh, they absolutely have, and but they also have depth. So here's the good thing, if you're a Virginia fan, he shouldn't get worn out, because they've got some guys behind him who can spell him. So it's gonna spare him some wear and tear, and he should be even better as the season goes along.
Yeah. And the biggest thing that stands out about him is on that third and one run where he breaks out for a touchdown, or the fourth and one run
Fourth
that
and
he
one,
breaks
yeah.
out for a touchdown, he makes his guy miss in the hole, and then he still has the burst that, 5'9", 204 pounds is what he's listed at the UVA website to kind of get there. Now, on that 66-yard run, it looks like NC State might actually catch up with him, but he had just enough to get there for the touchdown. And that's something, the explosive plays in the run game is something that Virginia and Tony Elliott that they've wanted for quite a while here.
Here's a research project for you. Not that I've delved in. Who's the last Virginia running back to have two touchdown runs of more than 35 yards in the same game?
That's another good one that sounds like it's going to take more than a couple hours.
Right? 39 and 66.
Yeah. Again, explosive runs. They had 11 explosive plays on the day. NC State also had 11 explosive plays on the day. So let's get into this UVA defense right now. I don't have any other adjectives to describe it, so I just put in the rundown bad. Zero sacks, only one quarterback hurry by a defensive lineman. For as much as we talked about the depth on this defensive line and the amount of transfers that they brought in the defensive line, zero turnovers created, 11 explosive plays given up. What do you attribute the struggles on defense?
Couple things, Preston. NC State could not run the ball against East Carolina. NC State ran the ball at will, might be too generous a description, but almost
Essentially.
against UVA. More than 6 yards a carry, less than 3 yards a carry against East Carolina. That's unacceptable. And I found it interesting that post game, when I asked Tony Elliott about no sacks by the defense, no forced turnovers, he immediately started applauding his offensive line because they hadn't allowed any sacks. And I'm like saying, yeah, that's right, but that's not what I asked you. And then he said, eh, maybe we need to, yes, they got to get to the quarterback. And this has been an ongoing issue. And now, CJ Bailey is 6'6". He is dynamic and he does get the ball out quickly. I understand that. But at some point, you got to make him uncomfortable. And they rarely made him uncomfortable on Saturday. And then you mentioned Hollywood Smothers, who's on everybody's all-name team.
Oh, absolutely.
And that one, the 50-plus yarder there, like, didn't go for a touchdown. But it just seemed like a matter of time before he was really going to break one.
The two things that I noticed is kind of the biggest takeaways for me defensively on Saturday. And I talked to Ahmad Hawkins, Virginia Sports Radio Network lead analyst at halftime about the rotation. At the beginning, we've heard Tony Elliott talk about, we got all this depth and we want to rotate, give guys less snaps so they're more juiced up. I was like, but you're subbing off five, six guys every play, every snap. And I don't know if you're saving that much energy by running to the sideline, taking one play off and running back on. Like, it feels like
Right.
you'd have the same amount of energy if you just stayed on the field. It did seem like as the game went on that they were rotating less, and Tony said that was mainly due to, they were kind of just keeping base guys out there because of situational football and stuff. But I was like, I don't know. It seemed like he'll notice that these guys were kind of gassed, and for a defense too, I made this point in my article. There are eight new starters on this defense, and that includes guys that were already at the program and guys that transferred in. There are eight new starters out there, so a defense that already doesn't have a lot of chemistry together to then
Right.
rotate them in and out, so they're not really building upon that chemistry, I kind of think ties one hand behind your back. So that was the first thing in the first half. The second half, the thing that stood out to me, just really bad angles, like
Yeah,
really
you
bad
mentioned that to
tackling
me in the
angles.
press box. Yeah.
The one that stands out the most is Landon Danley, the linebacker, coming free on a blitz, having CJ Bailey right in his grasp, and but a terrible angle, Bailey rolls out and he's free for a 12-yard touchdown run. No one around him, and really didn't seem like anyone else on defense was looking that way. And there was a lot of bad angles that day. We were talking about after the game, some other people just like maybe being 6'6", maybe those long strides kind of throw defenders
Sure.
off. But you kind of play the game. If that was Cam Robinson on the
I was gonna say,
blitz,
maybe Cam Robinson fixes
it's a
that.
little different. But yeah, a lot of bad angles. I think back too to Jordan Robinson, the cornerback on the first drive of that game, getting completely turned around and not knowing. I think he kept running and a receiver broke the route off, and there was just a lot of that, the miscommunications throughout the game.
Yeah, it did seem that way. I mean, the first four series, both teams, 75 yards touchdown, 75 yards touchdown, 75 yards touchdown, 75 yards touchdown. It's like, have we really entered the Big 12 here?
Yeah, the ping
And
pong out there.
it truly was. And and then that stretch in the third quarter, to start the second half. But once again, they come up with those two big stops to give the offense a chance. And and there are some guys who, Melton, he's like a step away, it seems, from making a really huge
Yeah.
play. I think he had the one hurry of Bailey, if memory. I don't know if he
It
was
was
credited with it.
Fish. Yeah, well, he had the
Oh, did
one.
K-Mac get it?
Fisher K-Mac was the one that Fish on the stat sheet, but Melton had the one where he had him in his like grasp, and then like he spun away, and I think they eventually got him down. But after a run, it was kind of a weird. That was in the first half that Melton got in there.
Okay. And then, I think their safety play has been good in spots and was again on Saturday. But you mentioned, I mean, corner has been, a bugaboo for a while. That's why they hit the portal so hard. And wow, they clearly missed Cam Robinson. And you knew they would. I mean, he's their best defensive player.
Yeah. Danley looked really good in the first week. Of course, that's against Coastal Carolina, but
Right.
it just seemed like the angles that, a young player, especially a guy that transitioned from safety to linebacker, the angles that he's trying to learn now. But I think the biggest thing is, this defensive line has to step up because, it brought in all these veteran guys that, some had proven production, like a Fisher K-Mac or even Kazim Moore at a lower level, Daniel Rickard at a lower level
Ricker,
as well.
yeah.
They had proven production, or they were high quality guys like Mitchell Melton at Ohio State backing up, one of the best defensive lines in the country. So you feel like these guys have to find a way. And at some point, too, you wonder, is this a scheme thing? Because I feel like the things I hear every year from Tony Elliott about the pass rush is, well, the quarterback has a quick release, or the defensive line, maybe needs some help with some blitzes to get home. We can't win, our one-on-one matchups. And that seems to be the repetitive thing that I hear about the pass rush, because it has been, I think, since their first year that they had some semblance of a pass
Yes.
rush.
First year. The last
Yeah.
2 years have been dreadful.
Yeah.
And I keep coming back to this, and it's something you and I have talked about. It is so unusual in this day and age for a head coach to start his tenure with three consecutive losing seasons and to not make any changes to his staff.
Yeah.
He is riding with his guys, and how it all turns out, we don't know. But man, it's a risk.
I think someone made the point to me Saturday, like if you had started the season and said that John Rudzinski and the defensive staff would be in more hot water than the offensive staff, like how would you have felt? I mean, that's what it feels like right now. Yeah, we'll see if they could turn around. Let's look ahead now to William and Mary. Again, like I said, a soft landing spot. You have William and Mary, then you have your ACC opener against a Stanford team that has really struggled so far this season. What is one thing that you want to see from UVA? And it's a bounce back game against William and Mary, a team that's 1-1 so far in the season, a loss to Furman in their opener, and then they rebound last week with a win over Maine. What can you actually look to see from Virginia in a game like that?
Well, I think what you want to see is what you have seen from Virginia of late against FCS opponents. In large measure, since that fiasco against Richmond in Bronco Mendenhall's first game in 2016, Cavaliers haven't messed around with the one William and Mary game got a little
Yeah.
dicey in the second half. But for the most part, it has been blowouts. And you just go out there. And this is a William and Mary team that was picked well deep into the CAA standings, played 2 1-score games in as many outings, new quarterback, new coordinator. If this is a game at halftime, Virginia's got an issue. And then, Stanford coming east, you got to win that game.
Yeah.
And then, as you and Andrea apparently discussed on the pod last week, then comes two really interesting contests. The 30th anniversary game against the Noles on a Friday night, and then the trip to Louisville. And I don't know how much of Louisville James Madison you watched. And yes, the Cardinals have playmakers everywhere. But Miller Moss does not look all that at
Yeah.
quarterback. And now there is the anti-CJ Bailey. He is about as stationary as you can get. If the Cavaliers can't get that guy to the ground, then the conversations are going to get ratcheted up a notch.
Virginia's played well against Louisville these
Yes.
past few years, even when they have been dreadful in every other game. So
Yes,
that's definitely
100%.
one that I've had highlighted. I think that's I'll have to check. I'm sure the lines have moved in recent weeks as Florida State has done better, but that was their biggest, underdog game going into the season was at Louisville. But after what we saw against that JMU game, we'll see kind of how that plays out. The things I want to see these next couple of weeks against William and Mary and Stanford, especially, I think the defense has to ratchet up a notch. I want to see sacks. I think William and Mary is only allowed. And they've allowed 5 sacks in 2 games. You got to at least go out there and get three. I
Yeah.
mean, if not just one.
Right. If Maine and Furman are getting sacks
Yeah.
against William and Mary, by golly, UVA should.
Because the one thing I can't hear after Saturday's game against William and Mary is, well, the quarterback got the ball out really fast. I can't hear that again for a third straight game. The defense has to get home, and they have to do it against Stanford as well, as kind of building momentum up to that game against Florida State. Caused some turnovers too. I mean, Ethan Minter had the interception in the first game. They've had, I think they caused 3 turnovers in that first game overall. You got to see some more playmaking just out of this defense over the next couple of weeks.
Yes. And the only turnover of the game Saturday decided it for the most part. And it had been such a clean game up until then. And yes, you've got to create havoc, especially against William and Mary. And then I would think you get Stanford down a little bit, and given how the Cardinal season has started, and given that it's an East Coast trip, I think at that point, if you get ahead, there should be no coming back for Stanford. You should be able to close them out emphatically.
Pour it on.
Yes.
So, well, it'll be interesting couple of weeks coming up. But again, like I said, I think that Florida State and Louisville game now, with basketball season kind of in the ether coming up, like you want to win one of those games to keep the engagement going further into the season, especially if. I mean, it would be great. A Friday night game at home against Florida State, the 30th anniversary. I know I've had that one highlighted since it came out. I'm not sure, like, at this point, how many Virginia fans like actually remember that as a rivalry game. It's been quite some time since they played regularly, and I remember 2019, that was great crowd for that game against Florida State at home. Obviously you can go all the way back to the 2000s when they were playing more regularly. So I'm excited to see kind of how that one plays out, especially with how Florida State started the season.
Yeah, given the Seminoles' start, and they'll come in there undefeated. I think they've got an FCS and then a bye, or an open date is, I guess, the proper term, before playing Virginia. And on the flip side, Florida State has Miami after UVA. Now, are they foolish enough to be caught looking ahead? Interesting question. Florida State teams have been known to be foolish previously.
It could be a weird night. Friday night on the road, Miami the next week. I mean, it could be a weird night in Charlottesville that week. But David, thank you again for coming on today. We had a lot to talk about after that Saturday in Raleigh, and we'll see what the next couple weeks look like for Virginia, and we'll talk to you later in the season, I'm sure.
Sounds good, Preston. And hey, my message to UVA fans would be, after 2 weeks, and I thought Virginia was going to be markedly better this season. I'm more in on Virginia now, even after they lost that game Saturday. I'm more in on them than I was beforehand. For what it's worth, I don't know squat, but it's just from watching it with my own eyes.
I come away same. I don't think there's a game on the schedule. And we keep saying manageable schedule because there shouldn't be a game on there that you automatically write off, like that you don't give Virginia a chance in. And that has not been the case for a couple years now for this Virginia football team. So it's a good position to be in. You're not going to go undefeated. No one was expecting undefeated going into the season. So one setback early on. But David, thanks again. That'll do it for the Who's On podcast. We will check back with you later in the week. I've got UVA associate men heads basketball coach Griff Aldrich joining the show. Talk a little bit about some basketball coming up. I'll also do a little bit more of a preview of the William and Mary game then. You could check that out on our YouTube page here, the Who's On podcast, our new YouTube channel, as well as Apple, Spotify. Please like, subscribe, follow, leave a 5-star review, do all the things. But we'll see you later here on the Who's On podcast.